Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Resolute Square.
There was also maintained what was called an enemies list, which was rather extensive and continually being updated.
Democrats want Republicans dead.
Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
The women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions.
On January 6th of 2021, you had tens of thousands of people peacefully protesting.
No, it's not a right-wing conspiracy theory. It's not QAnon. It's real.
I'm Rick Wilson, and this is The Enemies List.
Our guest today on The Enemies List is Governor Asa Hutchinson. Asa Hutchinson this year ran in the Republican primary against Donald J. Trump. He did not, like the rest of his colleagues in the field, make it to the finish line because of Donald Trump's dominance in the Republican Party. But Governor Hutchinson ran as the kind of Republican that I grew up as, a guy talking about limited government and balanced budgets and fiscal responsibility and personal integrity and all that. And I wanted to have a conversation with him today based on that Republican Party that used to exist and talk about a little bit about how he sees that we could get a path back into something like that in the world where we have two parties that aren't blood enemies, but are instead competing sets of philosophies. So Governor, welcome to The Enemies List. I'm very grateful you came on today. So tell us a little bit about, you know, where you see the 2024 playing field as it stands right now and where you think this is going if Donald Trump is reelected and what it does to the Republican Party.
Well, it makes the road to recovery a very long road if you're trying to get back to traditional republicanism with the values that you articulated. And I would add to that where you are loyal to your allies and understand that America does have a role to play in this world. And that's a big, big difference with the direction that Donald Trump wants to take the party and has taken the party. And so how do you get back there? And to me, you have to go back to 1976. And that's when, of course, Ronald Reagan challenged Gerald Ford for the nomination. He took that battle to the convention floor. He lost. But it was for really the direction of the party, whether it was going to go to a more conservative direction, which was then limited government, making sure that we are strong in national defense, versus Gerald Ford that was taking the party a little bit different direction. Gerald Ford lost that race to Jimmy Carter. But because of that battle in 76 and 1980, it was a conversion of the party to represent the values that Ronald Reagan and the vast majority of traditional Republicans represented. And so you come to the convention this year, you know, I think we ought to have a fight. You know, those, it might be in a minority, but you need to stand up for non-Trump values. You need to stand up for a return to the values of leadership and character in our party. And it might cause us not to do well in November. That's all unpredictable. But we've got to have a fight if we're going to return the Republican Party to its roots and to a party that believes in solving problems for America, not just grievances, that believes in the Freedom Party and not just a Putin Party, that believes in leadership and not isolationism. That's the fight that we're engaged in.
You know, Governor, that's a really interesting point because you were one of the, one of a cohort of Republican governors who actually wanted to make things work for your people in the state of Arkansas. You wanted to make government work for people because that's what they deserved. And I think one of the hardest things to shake for right now is that a lot of these Republicans, they want everything to break down. They seem to want the whole system to kind of collapse so that it can just be about the outrage, just be about the anger, just be about the, you know, the edges of the party and the crazies.
That's right. And that's what's unique about governors. We have to solve problems.
Right. Governors have to do work.
Yeah. And you're close enough to the people that if you don't address those challenges, then you're held accountable and you're out of office. And problem solving is an important part of being governor. But yes, right now we have a party led by Donald Trump that wants to attack our system of justice, wants to end the FBI, wants to end the ATF. And I presented a plan to reform all of our federal law enforcement agencies. But we have to support the rule of law in our country versus tearing down our institutions, our institutions. And so to me, we've got to get back to that problem solving, addressing real problems. And it doesn't, people are angry today and they have a right to be angry because nothing's working in Washington. And that's where you've got to start, the Congress of the United States, that if you want to negotiate a good border bill that has asylum reform, when it gets to your desk, vote for it.
There seems to be very little motivation on the part of many of these folks in Congress to actually put aside the sort of showmanship. I'm going to be on Fox yelling about whatever versus, hey, we've got to pass a bill for, we've got to pass an ag bill. Hey, we've got to pass a continuing resolution to keep the government open. Hey, we've got to do all the nuts and bolts things. And I think that's something I miss about the party is there was an era where there were Republican governors who were innovating, who were fiscal conservatives, but they weren't, they didn't just hate government to hate government. And they didn't hate government because it paid off for them politically to hate it and it caused chaos.
Well, we fight for a limited role of government, which means we do have government. And government should be working for the common good and not for personal gain, which is a defining characteristic. And this is a plague of both parties as well in Washington, D.C. The Democrats do the same thing. They would prefer an issue over getting something done if they don't have the White House. Now, when you have the White House, they know the president's going to get some credit if you do something in a bipartisan way. But they'll play the same game if there is a Republican president. And at some point, you just got to say, let's work to get it done. We think back to Ronald Reagan again. He was a pragmatic. When he got elected in 1980, Democrats controlled Congress. So if he wanted to get his economic package through, he had to work with Tip O'Neill. He did. And he got his package through and it turned America around. So you got to have a little bit of that pragmatism in place.
Support for Rick Wilson's The Enemies List comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/Wilson. That's odoo.com/Wilson. Odoo, modern management made simple. When people are honest with themselves, I think they miss the moments where both sides said, hey, you know what? We can't drag this over our finish line. You can't drag this over your finish line. Let's sit down. Let's do some of this that, you know, and honestly, people like Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid both understood when they had to go and talk to somebody on the other side of the aisle. Whoever replaces Mitch McConnell will definitely not be that kind of person. And I'm not sure that there's a lot of motivation inside the Democratic Party today to do that either.
That's right. And so the only option is for a leader to say, if we're going to push Congress to go the right direction, get something done, you've got to take that message to the people in a televised address and build public support. Congress will respond to public support. Ronald Reagan, again, did that when he wanted to sell his economic package. He was on TV selling it to the American public. Now, the problem is, of course, Joe Biden doesn't have the ability to convey and communicate a powerful enough message. But you have to have that. It all begins with leadership as to how you can try to work with Congress. And if they get bottlenecked, you've got to go straight to the American public. Border security is a perfect example of how our system has failed. The Republicans had a list of demands. It's the greatest challenge that we face, and it's on Americans' mind. President Biden said, no, we're not going to do asylum reform. Well, they held their guns, and eventually President Biden said, okay, we'll put asylum reform in there because we knew we had to get something done. And then we want to make it a political weapon versus getting something done. And that goes back to Donald Trump sending the message to Congress, I'd rather have this as a political issue than to solve the problem.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
So one of the things that you mentioned in passing in the beginning, and I think it's one of the greatest differences between the two eras of the Republican Party, is the GOP today, folks like us who came through the Cold War era, I can't recognize a Republican Party that thinks that Vladimir Putin should be the guy who wins in Ukraine. That to me is one of the most painful and egregious and strange elements of this entire transformation. What do you think about that? And why do you think that's happening? I always ask people that question.
I can understand some of Donald Trump's hold on the party whenever he complains about the prosecutions, particularly the one out of New York, that it was politically motivated. There's actually some merit to that. And so I can understand how the base rallies around and says, this is not right. But whenever it comes to Putin, it baffles me that Tucker Carlson can go over there and embarrass himself and embarrass journalism, actually, and play in the hands of a dictator. But that impacts our base. And then Donald Trump can't even bring himself to say, this is such a tragedy for Alexei Navalny and in his murder in prison. He can't even bring himself to acknowledge the martyrdom and the patriotism and the love for freedom and to praise that. Instead, he holds back. You think back whenever Donald Trump chose Putin's intelligence information over our own CIA. So I don't understand this at all. This is something that should be integral to who we are as a country. And it does reflect, I think, the fact that the electorate has been changing, and it's worrisome to me because this is the first time in history that it's not a global leader that has lost global power. It is actually a global leader voluntarily withdrawing from global power. And that is not the America that I want to see.
You know, you've been in a lot of roles. You've played in federal office, you've played in state office, you've been in presidential administrations. And there was a consistent through line to my mind of particularly anything that was foreign policy facing or defense policy facing for 75 years, since, into World War II, that was you know, we're going to stand this country's military and intelligence and diplomatic and moral assets against Soviet communism and other forms of oppression in the world. You know, it used to, I think freedom used to be like the one of the definitional lines in the Republican Party, but this embrace of authoritarianism, that's something that I think is extraordinarily dangerous for our allies, because, you know, right now NATO is looking at us with the sort of like side eye saying, are you guys okay? Are we going to be all right? I think it's put us in a really dangerous position.
Well, it has, and that's worrisome anytime our allies see the United States of America as weakening, as not being trustworthy. And whenever you look at pre-World War II, as you pointed out, we had the America First movement, and it was based, and literally the leaders of the American First movement were saying, we should not be sending supplies to England, because no matter what we send there, they will not be able to withstand against the might of Nazi Germany, and they will fall. Well, obviously, they were wrong, both morally and practically, and underestimated the courage of England and Winston Churchill. And today, you have the same type of America First saying there's a close question here as to whether we should help Ukraine. America should always be on the side of the oppressed and not the oppressor, on the side of those that believe in freedom and not on the side of the dictator. And you can debate how much, but my goodness, which side you're on should not even be debatable.
Right, exactly. I think there would be in the before times, there would be a debate on what weapon systems or how much of any given, you know, item or how much we're going to spend in a quarter or a year. But now it's like, the argument is save them or hand them to Vladimir Putin's Russia. So, you know, that was one of the contrast things that you brought up during the course of this campaign. You called yourself a consistent conservative. I think that's exactly correct, given your record and your posture over the last, you know, 40 plus years in public life. As you look forward to this election, I know it's still hard for a lot of Republicans to say they're going to either sit it out, vote for somebody else, or vote for Joe Biden. Where's your head at right now on this? Because, I mean, I think we can all disagree as conservatives. There are plenty of things Joe Biden's policy suite of options is not something we're like, oh, I love every single thing. But it seems to me that right now we're at a point where Donald Trump is a bigger threat to the to everything versus a shorter term threat to, you know, on the policy front. Where's your head at on that?
Well, in a difficult position, and everybody will probably come down in a different way. There's going to be some that say, I'd like to have anybody but Donald Trump, but he's going to be the nominee of the party. And so they're going to sign up and say, you know, his economic policies will be better than Joe Biden. They're going to be that element. And then there's going to be some that, you know, just shift and say, as you pointed out, Joe Biden could be the lesser of the two evils. And then there's a question as to whether there's going to be a third party alternative. To a large extent, that's, you know, some people see that right now as throwing away the vote. I think it's too unpredictable at this time as to the impact of a third party play in this race. My head, I'm still hoping that somebody rational will come out of the convention and that something will play differently. But I cannot see myself signing up to support Donald Trump with the threat that I see he is, both to our party and to our country.
Yeah, it's I talk to a lot of ex-Republicans and current Republicans who are, and I think one thing that, and I'm glad your campaign did this, I'm glad that Nikki Haley's campaign is doing this right now. There was a long period between maybe 2016 and 2023 where a lot of Republicans were scared to even say boo about Donald Trump, scared to criticize him at all. But now we're seeing that between, you know, 25% and 40% of the electorate in the early states has been looking for an option against Donald Trump, been looking for something. It seems to me that the non-Trump vote was bigger than people calculated it, and bigger than I think the media has been willing to admit.
I agree. The fact that Nikki got 40% in South Carolina, The fact that a significant percent in Michigan went against Donald Trump, we'll see how Super Tuesday. But I think what you'll see in Super Tuesday is that even across the South, you know, Trump will win handily, but you're going to see a significant block of votes that's going to be looking for an alternative. And so that's a warning sign for Donald Trump. He's always had an urgency about wrapping this nomination up because the storm clouds are going to gather. There's a gathering storm, and it's court cases. It is discontent in the party. It is his name calling. All of the above is just going to wear thin. And so his support is fragile. Now, he'll probably be able to pull it together because he controls the RNC. He'll hold it together through the convention. But it's going to be a pretty dark day after that convention, whenever cases will be coming to trial and people are wrestling with the challenges that we face as a country and whether he is suitable in terms of character for the task.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things when I was prepping for this interview that I was thinking about is, you know, again, you've been in this space, you've been in Republican politics your entire adult life. You've seen everything back and forth. And the cultural transformation of the Republican Party is something I always find kind of fascinating. I remembered this actually before I went and looked it up, that you, as a very young U.S. attorney, had prosecuted the Covenant Sword and the Arm of the Lord, which was a white supremacist group out in Arkansas. And I recently spoke to somebody else who was in the sort of Republican and conservative movement that, on some of these extremist groups back in the 80s and 90s. And he said to me, he goes, you know, at the time we felt like we were sort of wrapping up that part of history. And now it seems like a lot of those people have come back out from underneath the rocks that they were under and have become a bigger voice in the Republican Party than they have been in the pre-Trump era.
Well, it's true. And that was exactly my thought in the 80s when I prosecuted the terrorist groups at great risk. And it was a national story. And there was the rise of the white nationalists then, the neo-Nazis then, the patriot groups then, and they all tilted toward the violent side of it, as well as other wrongs that they committed. I thought we put an end to that, and I knew that every generation will face these challenges. But whenever you have a strong meeting of the rule of law, then that drives them down. But what we've seen in the last 8 years is an embracing of that by Donald Trump or leaders of the party that have empowered them again. And they're all driven by grievances, and they just take it to an extreme. And he has lit that fire a number of times. And yes, we still have that danger to our party.
It just strikes me as something that in a way it feels like we had this sort of period where a lot of the hard work to roll those people up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s has just been forgotten, and that threat is bigger than ever. So, well, Governor Hutchinson, one more question for you. What's next for you? What are your plans? I know that you have had a full life. What do you have on deck coming forward?
Well, it's an exciting time for me because there's a world of opportunity out there. Thank goodness I've got good health. And so we're looking for that right opportunity. I plan on being engaged in this political season, just expressing myself, but also with my background in homeland security and drug enforcement, we'll have some opportunities in those fields as well. It's a great time also for me to be a grandparent, watching my grandson play basketball and their success stories.
I love that. I love that. I'm about to be one myself. I'm excited about it. So it's been great having you on the show today, Governor. I really appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks so much, Rick.
Well, this one is for my friends in the Democratic Party and a lot of folks who kept believing that the courts would save you. They will not. This election will only be won by grinding, miserable, constant, relentless hard work to beat Donald Trump. I said this about a year and a half ago, as all these cases were coming out onto the radar screen. that very few of these cases would make it to the finish line. Very few of these cases would sentence him before the election, and none of them were going to derail him politically. And now, just as I'm getting on this recording today, I had a Democratic friend of mine livid about the Supreme Court 9-0 on the Colorado case. There are no shortcuts. The courts will not save you. No one's coming to parachute in and rescue you. We have to beat him the old-fashioned way, on the ground, at the ballot box, in the voting booth, and we have to do it in a number and a scope and a scale that has never been imagined before, if I may use a sort of Trumpian turn of phrase. We have to whip his ass like a rented mule. We have to beat him like a cheap rug. I could go on with these analogies, but you get the point. Stop thinking that Jack Smith or Fannie Willis or Letitia James or anybody else is going to kill off Donald Trump's political campaign and career. It's not. Get to work. Get to work. Get to work. And that way, we can keep him on and you off the enemies list.
Thanks again for listening to The Enemies List. If you have any comments, questions, or if there's someone you'd like to hear on the podcast, hit me up on Twitter at TheRickWilson. Thanks again for the wonderful support you've shown the pod. We're growing fast. It really helps if you will share this with your friends, your family, and anyone else who, like us, is trying to save democracy. While you're at it, if you could rate and review the podcast, I would be very much appreciative. I know this is the sort of thing you've heard a billion times. Please rate, review, like, blah, blah, blah. But you need to do it. It really does help us a lot. We are slaves to the algorithm, my friends. And if you do this, it will help get the pod out further. Anyway, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time. And remember, whatever you do, stay off the list.